VIP of the Month Spotlight returns. Now, let's welcome our host, Teresa Rose.
Welcome, everyone, to January 28, 2019, the first VIP of the Month interview for 2019. We had a great year last year. We had great interviews, which I listed in the announcement. And anyone that missed the interviews in 2018, they're under the interest site interest. You can go to there and you can listen to all the interviews that were last year. We had some great interviews. We interviewed Marlene. We interviewed Myrna, Bernie, Mike Everett. We interviewed Els, and who else am I forgetting? I think I'm forgetting one. But we had some great interviews, and it was a great interview.
Parker.
Thank you for reminding me. Parker. And we had some great interviews last year, and if you missed them, please go up and listen. Very interesting facts about our members, and it will help you understand and learn a little bit more about our members. Again, a few housekeeping rules before we start. Once the interview starts, I ask everyone not to key up until the interview is done. I will give you time at the end of the interview to ask questions. And if when you are asking questions, if you would only key up one at a time and give the person time to answer the question before you key up again to ask another question. And with that being said, we are going to start the first interview of 2019 VIP of the Month for January.
Some That song was played last year when we had our first interview because I was a special guest. At the time we were talking during our pre-interview, I said to Teresa Rose, maybe I'll interview you on the first anniversary. Well, the event actually started in February, but I will be deep into my move at the end of February, so we decided to do it now. And I'm honored to be able to do this. And Teresa's put a lot of work into these VIP of the Month Spotlight events, and I am so honored to be able to now learn all of her deep, dark secrets as she has been revealing them to us through this past year of interviews. So, Teresa Rose, welcome to VIP of the Month Spotlight, and it's so great to have you as our guest this month.
Thank you very much, Marlene. It is great to be here, and I'm looking forward to this. A little nervous, but I'm sure you'll be kind.
Well, I was a little scared myself when I had to do it, but we got through it and we had a great time, and I hope you will too. I'm sure we all will have a great time learning what makes Teresa Rose tick. And so I guess we'll start at the beginning. Where were you born?
I was born in the western part of North Carolina. I was born in Sylvan, North Carolina, which is way up in the western part of North Carolina. About 20, 25 minutes away is Cherokee, North Carolina, which a lot of people know all about. I was born in a small town, like I said, called Silva. I was born on April the 9th, 1958, in the old John T. Harris Hospital, how fitting, which no longer stands and has been rebuilt. I guess you could say I'm from the hills.
Yes, that's funny. John T. Harris, that's all right. So describe your early childhood, your home, your family, your parents, all of that kind of cool stuff.
Well, as I said, I was born in Silva, North Carolina. My mom's family is from Silva, and my dad's family is from Franklin, North Carolina, which literally is across the mountain near the Macon County, Georgia line. Both my parents were born and raised in that area. I am a sibling of four. There's four of us. I had two sisters and one brother. My brother is 6 years older than myself, and I have a sister, Patricia, that is 14 months younger than me. My baby sister, her name is Jacqueline. She is 5 years younger, and again, I said my brother was 6 years older. His name is Kenny Ray. All of my siblings are still living with the exception of my baby sister, and she passed away 11 years ago due to leukemia. So lots of aunts and uncles, all my grandparents, everybody pretty much was from the area where I was born and raised. We lived there until I was age of five, and both my parents worked for the Burlington Hosiery Mill, and it closed, and there was just no work in that area. And my mom had a brother that lived in Monroe, North Carolina, which is the town that I mainly grew up in, and said, come this way, there's work here. So we packed up and moved to Monroe when I was 5 years old and pretty much lived in Union County the rest of my life.
Do you remember anything about Silva and what that town was like, or were you too young to really have any set memories of it?
Oh, no, I have lots of memories. I mean, I can probably remember back till I was probably 3-4 years old. I can remember both my grandparents did not have indoor plumbing. That did not happen until in my teen years. I can remember there were no fast food restaurants, no McDonald's, nothing like that. They were all little town restaurants. And there's just not a lot. I think there was a bowling alley and maybe one movie theater. The highlight thing was in between Silva, North Carolina, and Franklin. You literally go across the mountain, and there's Gold City, which had the chairlift, and you go in mine for gold. And, of course, being from the area, we never really got to go to that. We did go over to Cherokee some, but not any of the other tourists like Maggie Valley, Santa Land was, you know, nearby. We never got to go to any of those places. My family was very, very poor. I grew up very, very poor. And so, you know, we knew those things existed, but we never got to we experience those. We mainly got to play on both my grandparents had quite a bit of land. My grandmother lived on a major river in Silva. The train tracks literally ran in front of her house. We used to play on the train tracks. It's a wonder some of us we didn't get hit by a train. We took my baby sister and went down to the trestle over the river. It's a wonder one of us didn't fall through there. My grandparents that lived in Franklin, Grandpa had a woodshed. We used to go out and play in the woodshed and put sand on his wood block, which was not the thing to do because it dulled his axe. And after the third time he told us that, he tore our tails up. But no, it was pretty much just, you know, playing outside old-fashioned because we didn't really get to experience all the other stuff because, like I said, we were very poor.
So it sounds like you kind of had to make your own entertainment. So was the playing on the tracks and the trestle, were those the things you got into the most trouble for?
Oh, no, I was thinking about this. The one thing I can remember getting in the most trouble for was at my grandparents' house in Franklin, my grandma and grandpa Holland. My baby sister was probably maybe 3, maybe 4 at the time. And my grandparents literally lived probably the road from the main road back to their property where the house was over 4 miles long. And if you went down to the main road, there was a river there also. And there was a campground there, and we used to come across the metal bridge and go up this real steep hill and then go 4 miles out to my grandparents' house. And you would see all the kids down camping with their parents and on tube, you know, doing the tubes down the rapids and all that stuff. And we never got to do any of that. So me and my sister and a couple of cousins, we decided we're all going to walk all the way down to the bridge. Well, we took my baby sister. And in Franklin, North Carolina, there's a lot of red clay. Needless to say, we went all the way down to the river, got wet, and none of us knew how to swim. And we climbed up this red clay bank. So when we made it back to the house, of course, my parents knew where we were at. And needless to say, we all really got our tails tore up. So I would say that's probably the most trouble I can really think of getting into when I was of a young age.
So you say you got your tails tore up. Is that Carolinian for getting a spanking?
Well, that's Southern Hills for getting a spanking. I mean, you didn't get a spanking. You got your tail tore up. So, you know, mom never really spanked us. I think she might have spanked me one time in my whole life. Dad always did that. And all she had to do was say, wait till your daddy gets home. He's going to tear your tail up. And she was right. He did.
So, tell me about the bicycle accident with your brother.
Well, this was when I was 6 years old. I was in the first grade. We lived in Monroe, North Carolina, like I say, when we moved there when I was 5. And we lived in a duplex house, and we had neighbors on one side, and we lived on one side. So, and my baby sister she was not even 1 at the time. And my street had speed bumps in the road. And across the street, there was a big pond, but it had a fence all the way around it. So my brother had a bicycle, and he was taking my sister and I for bicycle rides on the handlebars. And we would sit on the handlebars, and he'd go up the road, and he would just go as fast as he could, and he would hit the speed bumps. Well, he was doing that, and we were sitting there playing on the steps with bottle caps. You know how you used to collect the bottle caps because they had stuff written inside it. And my mom came out the door, and she says, Teresa Rose, she says, when your brother gets back with your sister, you tell him I said I don't want to see either one of you on that bicycle again. Well, when Kenny came back with Patricia, I started crying because he had ridden her one time more than he had ridden me. So he says, okay. And of course, I didn't tell him. Mama said, don't put us back on the bicycle. So he took me for that ride so it would be even. And he hit a speed bump. My foot, right foot, went in the bicycle spokes, totally locked up the bicycle wheel, flipped the bicycle, knocked me unconscious, knocked two of my brother's teeth out. He hurt his arm, was bleeding. My sister starts screaming. Mom says she comes out the door. And here comes my brother up from the road through the front yard carrying me. Mom took a look at my foot and she was afraid to take my shoe off because she literally said it looked like it would fall off. Mom didn't have a car. We only had one car. Dad worked in Charlotte at the time. And so the neighbor next door didn't have a phone. We didn't have a phone. So the neighbor next door went to another neighbor's house, and that neighbor came and took us to the emergency room. So by the time I got to the emergency room, they had already contacted my dad, and he had already driven from Charlotte and pretty much got to the emergency room not long after I got there. And of course, all I was doing, I was a daddy's girl, so all I was doing was crying, I want my daddy. But I remember that I woke up at the hospital because I was unconscious till then. But crushed the bones in my right foot, and I literally could not walk on my foot for 6 weeks. And teachers brought my schoolwork to me, and letters from all my classmates and that sort of thing. So that's a good lesson to learn. When your parents tell you not to do something, you shouldn't do it, because if I'd listened, I wouldn't have gotten hurt.
True. Oh, my. What a deal. So let's move kind of into your schooling. And I kind of hear from the way you've described things, you were definitely not blind from birth, correct?
No, I was totally sighted more until I was age 30. And as school, like I said, we moved to the area I was raised in when I was 5. So I started the first grade, in Union County. And I went all the way through grades 1 through 12, and I graduated in 1976. And, again, like I said, we were poor, and, so there was no means of extended education after. There was no money to do that. But my 12 years in school were, had some, it was pretty eventful because we moved around a lot. My parents never owned a home. So we moved around a lot, and it was very difficult to make friends. I think when you and I talked on the phone, I am so envious when I hear people say that they are still friends with, kids they went to in school with in the elementary or their high school friends. I do have a couple that I still stay in contact with from high school, but very, very few. And, we were the poor kids, the ones that no one wanted to be friends with.
Oh, my. Well, that's pretty rough. And, I think one thing about it, though, is when you do cultivate a good friendship, I think, you find somebody that is real, because a lot of times the people that are really good friends will be friends with the ones that maybe no one else would choose. So did you like school? Do you have any memories of your early school years that you want to impart?
I did like school. Well, I should say I like school. In the first grade, every time I got to school, I cried. My stomach hurt. And my brother would have to walk. Well, let me explain. Right next door to the elementary school was the high school at the time. So my brother would walk me to school, and then he would go on to school because he was 6 years older than me. So, he would get to school and then he'd have to walk me back home because I would cry that my stomach was hurting. But Mom finally figured out that was just that I didn't want to be away from home. So that didn't last too long. But yeah, I enjoyed school. I really did. And the only trouble I ever got into any time during my 12 years of school was in the sixth grade. A girl and I got into a fight after school. And to this day, I still can't remember what it was about.
Oh, gosh. Did you have any teachers that impacted your life in any way?
Yes, I did. My seventh grade teacher, her name was Maggie B. Williams. She was a very devout Christian. It was very evident to me at that time and even more today. We had daily devotion every day in her classroom. And again, I will reiterate, you know, we were poor, and I can remember the seventh grade class was going to Asheville, North Carolina to the Biltmore House. And, you know, she found out that, you know, I was not going to be able to go because of the money situation. And she made sure that I got to go on that trip. And I never forgot that. Not only that, she was a wonderful science teacher. I learned a lot from her and a lot of respect for her. The other teacher that I really had a lot of respect for was Mrs. Hilton. She was my 11th and 12th grade English teacher. Had an enormous amount of respect for her. She was stern, but she made sure you learned. And she gave you that extra time. And maybe it was because, like I say, you know, by the time I was in high school, I'd already started working and doing some things and, you know, able to buy a little bit nicer clothes than what my parents could afford to buy. So in 11th and 12th grade, you know, it changed a little bit. She took the extra time with me, and she always sticks out in my mind. So those are my two teachers that I'll never forget what they, the impact that they made on my life.
Were you involved in extracurricular activities like sports or music or drama or anything like that?
I never was into sports. I was a cheerleader the last 2 years of high school, which was ironic, you know, being one of the poorest kids in school. I was in chorus 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. Enjoyed that very, very much. And I was in the bridge club and enjoyed that very much. I enjoyed bridge as well. When I was a sophomore in high school, we had two programs. One was called FHA and one was called DECA, which is Distributing Education Careers. And you could FHA was Future Homemakers of America. You could take all of your required classes in the morning, and then you would leave school at 12:30. Well, in DECA, you had to have a job in order to participate. So in my junior year, I joined the DECA program, and I left school at 12:30 every day, and I had a job with a local retail department store as an advertising manager for them, and enjoyed doing that. And of course, that was as soon as I turned 16, so I was able to work. And that kind of changed things because I was able to you know, buy clothes and do certain things that I wasn't able to do based on what my parents' income.
Wow, it was kind of a precursor in a way to what you ended up going into, you know, being a manager and things like that, which we'll get into in a couple of minutes. So at what point did you discover that guys were worth thinking about?
I would probably say maybe when I was 15. When I was a freshman in high school, across the road was the hospital in Monroe, Union Memorial Hospital. And my sister and I, we decided we wanted to be candy stripers. And so we were candy stripers, and we would, you know, work so many days at the hospital, and we would walk across from the high school to the hospital and do our tours of duties of whatever the assignments we were assigned at that time in the hospital. And there were, you know, they weren't, you know, they didn't call the guys candy stripers. They were mail orderlies. I think that's when I realized that there were really, you know, boys were worth paying attention, because it was kind of hard, you know, like I said, being so poor, you know, there were times that we, you know, I thought, you know, certain guys liked me or something, but, you know, guys, you know, it's kind of hard to tell. I had one guy when I was in the eighth grade that used to hide my purse every day. And, you know, I would have to find out where it was at the end of class. And that was a little, you know, disheartening for your purse to be hidden every day. And then later, you know, I found out that the boy actually did like me. But I would have never dreamed that, you know, so because he was on the football team. But I'd say probably 14, 15 years old.
Okay, so the time just flies when you do these things. So let's move along. Now, you said that you didn't have the money or the means to go to college at that point, but you did attend college, right?
I did attend not full-time college, but I did go to Central Piedmont Community College in Charlotte and receive some credits there. And I did get a diploma from Anson Tech for law and banking and principles of banking, which was during my banking career. I did attend and take accounting 1 and accounting 2 and accounting 3, which was very difficult for me because I was in banking, and debits and credit in banking are totally opposite from debits and credit in accounting. So that was quite a struggle, but I did make it through. So not really college full time, or, you know, I don't have a bachelor's degree or anything like that. So the career that I was able to accomplish in my banking career, which I am very proud of, came from strictly hard work and determination.
So where and how did you land your first job?
Well, my first job was when I was 15 years old, and I was a waitress in a local restaurant. And I worked there until I was in the DECA program in high school, which I left every day and went to work with Rose's Department Store as their advertising manager. And I did that part-time. And what that entailed was I placed all their radio ads, and I actually placed and formatted all their newspaper ads. So I did that up until I graduated high school. So at the time I graduated, then I was offered a full-time position at Rose's Department Store in the office as their accounts manager, which consisted of all accounts payables. And I made all of, you know, took all the registers, receipts for the day, and balanced those, and made all the deposits and everything. So I did that. And then in going into the bank every day and making my deposits, one day the branch manager came out to me and she says, "Your deposits are always so neat. They're always right. Have you ever thought about going into banking as a teller?" And I'd never, ever given it any thought. And I said, "Well, sure." And she says, "Well, we need some tellers." She says, "Why don't I set up an interview with you with Mr. Miller and have you come in for an interview?" So she did. And I went in for the interview, and I was hired as a teller. I went through teller training school for 2 weeks. I started out in banking in 1979. I started out as a teller, and I worked all the way up until the beginning of 97. And when I left banking and retired, I was a vice president.
Wow, that's incredible. So it was during this time and during your career then that you discovered your loss of vision, correct?
That is correct. I was diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa in March of 1989. And exactly 1 year and 2 days to the date, it progressed so rapidly that I had to stop driving in 1990. at that time, you know, I didn't really grieve or flinch about having to stop driving. I said, I've got my family, I've got my career, I can get through this. And I did, but blindness didn't really, it took a lot more from me than eventually my career. And that's the part that was the most difficult to handle.
So, you had a family at that point, and you had a teenage son, right?
I did. I married my high school sweetheart in 1977, and we had one son together and my only child, and he was born in October of 1980. And so I was diagnosed in 89, had to stop driving in 90, and I still had really good central vision. It was my peripheral vision. From 89 to 90, went down to 3 degrees, which is very, very small and very, very rapidly. My retina specialist has told me that the type of RP I have is a recessive dormant gene that can set dormant forever. And there are certain things that that can make the gene become active. And they are pretty much 99.9% sure that pregnancy is what activated my RP. And so in 1995, my central vision pretty much was starting to go as well. I had to start getting some sighted guide training. At that time, it was pretty evident that I was deafblind. I was, you know, had to have help. And my high school sweetheart looked at me and said, I didn't sign up for this, and walked out the door.
Oh, my. That must have been really devastating. But, you know, I get the sense that you are a survivor, and you do what needs to get, you do what needs to be done to get through something. And I believe that you have come through things. I imagine, now, you were telling me that you went to work for some center for the blind after a while?
I did. After I left banking, I continued to work from 1990 until the early parts of 97. I had to have a driver take me to and from work, and I was able to stay in my career. Which my career consisted of, I did commercial mortgage personal loans. I supervised over 200 people. That included CEOs, city execs, that included loan officers, customer service reps, and all tailors in my region. And so, you know, a lot of responsibility there. And it really changed my life when I had to leave work. And as you and I were talking, Mar, we sat down with my voc rehab counselor for the blind. The CEO of the bank sat down with me, and he says, Teresa, you know, you're an officer of the bank, you're a VP, you can go ahead and go out, you know, on retirement, which sitting down with my rehab teacher for the blind, I was one of the lucky blind people that had that option. Or, you know, the CEO gave me the option to transfer into the op center, which was about 45 minutes west of where I lived. Where I lived, we had no bus transits to Charlotte. We only had one taxi company in the whole city. So getting back and forth to work was going to be a very big challenge for me. And even my voc rehab counselor for the blind said, you know, you'd be better to take the retirement package. And so that's what I did. So after I did that and left banking, I was not satisfied staying at home doing nothing. So I did lots of volunteer work. I did volunteer work for United Way. I did volunteer work for Red Cross. I did volunteer work for JAR Center, which is Bible translating. They translate Bibles into every language and ship them all over around the world. I did volunteer work for them and work with their daycare center. But the one that I'm the most proud of is I did volunteer work for the Metro Atlanta Association for the Blind in Charlotte. I worked in Braille forming. I thermoformed Braille books for local kids in schools that were blind. I did reception work and answered the telephone. And then prior to me moving to England, I started up a volunteer program with them. They asked me if I would head up their volunteer program to oversee all of their volunteers. And that would have turned into a paying job once they had received a grant. But I got married again and moved to England. So that did not go anywhere further than where it was.
My goodness, to England. That's interesting. Do you have any pleasant memories? I assume, you know, that situation did not last real long. But do you have any pleasant memories of being over there?
I did, Mar. I really enjoyed living in England. Transportation over there for the blind is phenomenal. You have the train, you have the subway, you have a bus stop on every corner. There are taxis everywhere. And so many things are so close, depending on where you live, that you can pretty much walk. Everything is pretty blind friendly. All their TV shows are audio described. Their movies, audio description. So everything, they're well advanced in what they provide for the visually impaired in England, but in so many other areas, they are so regressed because all the stores over there close at 5 o'clock. And the only thing you can find open in the evening is a pub. Nothing's hardly open on Sunday. So you kind of regress there. But just some of the other things, they're just so far out ahead of the United States as far as what they do for their people with a disability of being blind or other disabilities. But I loved it over there. I got involved with the Resource Center for the Blind over there. I don't like being idle. I did volunteer work there 3 days a week as receptionist in the Resource Center. I was asked to sit on the board of directors for the Resource Center for the Blind, which I did and thoroughly enjoyed making a difference there. In the town I lived in, the West Midlands, it was called Hereford. The school for the College for the Blind was there. And so it was hard for me to meet people. So I decided what I was going to do was start up a luncheon club for the blind. So I started up a monthly friendship luncheon club, and to this day, I stay in contact with the president of the Board of Trustees of the Resource Center, and that luncheon club is still going on, and they meet once a month, and they have anywhere from 26 to 30 people. I just heard from Rita a couple of days ago, and she said several of the ones that originally were there when I started it, sure they sent their best regards to me. So got to meet a lot of people. We took turns picking restaurants and we'd go somewhere once a month and spend time. And it caught on really well and everybody enjoyed it. And I really enjoyed it. Had great memories there, but came back to the States in 2011.
Now, during this time, did you take formal mobility training for your travels?
I did have mobility training in England. While I was there, I did have mobility. I had mobility here in the States, and I'm a very good cane user. Never thought about a guide dog, but I am a very good cane user. So I did have mobility over there. Mr. Jarvis was my mobility trainer in England. Another thing, England, if you're blind over there, they provide you with a support person. So I had a support person. Her name was Donna, and she came twice a week. And she would help me with things, mail or, if there was something I needed help for her to make sure. For instance, if something needed to be dusted, or she would tell me, and if I couldn't reach it, she would help me. We would walk into town and go shopping, and there was no charge for that. That was made readily available to any person that was visually impaired. And she became a very good friend of mine. So, lots of good memories from over there.
Well, It sounds like they have some things as far as services like that, a little bit over the United States, which is kind of interesting. I wouldn't have guessed that, so I'm glad we got into that and discovered that. That's really interesting. So I know a lot of things have happened between 2011 and the present, and from all the things that you've experienced, first of all, are you content with your present life?
I am the happiest and the most blessed person to be living today. God has truly blessed me, and Mara, as you and I had a conversation, I would go through everything I've ever had to go through from the time I took my first breath to be where I'm at today. God put a wonderful man in my life. He has blessed me with wonderful friends. He has blessed me with good health. He has blessed me with always meeting my needs. And I couldn't ask for it to be any better.
If there is anything in your life that you could do over, what would that do over be?
You know, that's a hard question. I'm not exactly sure. I think if I could do anything all over again, it would be to spend the last 2 days of my dad's life with him again. There's things I wish I would have said, and things I would have thanked him for that, you know, we didn't realize it was going to come so quickly. I think if I could do anything over again, those sorts of things I would not have taken for granted, and I did. And only, you know, where he's at today, he knows how I feel about him and how thankful I am that, you know, we did grow up poor. But my dad always worked. He always had a job. He always strived. He always made sure we had a roof over our heads and we had food on the table. We may not have had the best clothes or the newest clothes, but he always made sure we had what we needed. And and most of all, he always made sure he took us to church. So those are some things that if I could do all over again, I wish I could.
Boy, I can relate to that. I was very close to my dad as well, so I can hear a bit of a break in your voice, and you obviously loved your dad very much as I did mine. So how has VIP Conduit impacted your life?
Well, VIP Conduit has impacted my life more because it has brought the best thing in my life that there ever has been, and that's Els. I don't think my path would have ever crossed with Els if it had not been for VIP. I had heard the name over the years, Els Pierce. I knew the name and that he was married to Jennifer from FTP, but that was about all I knew about the man. I didn't know anything else about him, never heard his voice or anything. Until on New Year's Eve, a year ago, this past New Year's Eve, when he spoke to me and said, Happy New Year. And I and Els both, we both believe, by no means of our own did we put ourselves in each other's path. We are firm believers that God put us together. I've been through some very difficult relationships, and of my own free will. And before I met Els, my mother said, I am praying that God is going to put a man in your life that will be good to you and love you. And, you know, I said, Mom, where's this person supposed to come from? Are they going to fall out of the sky? And she says, if that's how God gets them to you, that yes. And I fully believe that's what God did. He answered her prayer and he put Els in my life. And here we are today, and I'm the happiest I have ever been in my life.
That is so wonderful. Well, we are definitely getting down to the end of the show. We want to leave time for questions. So I guess my final question, the final question from me would be, are there any things that you want to, like, if you could leave a legacy for those who come after you, any words of wisdom that you could impart to anybody that would leave a lasting impression?
As I always say in church on Sundays when I pray is be kind to one another, treat everyone like you would like to be treated. Remember that we all are the same. We come from different walks of life. Some of us have more than others. Some of us are prettier than others. Some of us are skinnier than others. But we're all the same. We come from the same place. No one is better than anyone else. Always believe in what you believe, and always dream, because dreams do come true. And Mar, thank you so much for the song. That means so much to me. Somewhere Over the Rainbow is one of my, it is my favorite song. Dream the dreams and always believe in yourself. Be determined to always meet your goals. You know, I always said I was going to have a better life. And, you know, when my son was born, and, you know, I wanted him to have the things that I didn't have, and to be able to do the things and participate in things that, you know, none of me and my siblings were able to. And so therefore that put the determination in me, even after I had to stop driving. Never once did I say, well, I'm not going to be able to get to work. I just need to quit. It was, okay, let's find a driver. I'm going to get to work. I'm going to, you know, I love my job though. It was not really work for me. I loved my career. It was working with people. It was helping make people's dreams come true. So always be determined and always believe in yourself. And I always said I was going to be able to do something, and I was going to prove everybody wrong. I was not just that little poor kid that didn't have anything. I was going to grow up and be somebody. But you know, I was already somebody because God loved me, and I'm just as good as anybody else. So I guess if I could leave anything, especially to my grandchildren, I've got three wonderful grandchildren in Arizona, and I've got one granddaughter here in New Jersey. And as I always tell them, you know, treat everybody like you want to be treated, because they're just like you, and you're not any better, and they're not any better than you are.
Wow, how profound, and what a great way to end this fantastic anniversary interview. Again, I was extremely honored to do it. And we certainly learned a lot more about Teresa Rose than we knew at the beginning. And I will turn it back to you now for questions.
Hi, Teresa Rose. Good interview. You come across as having a calm and very even-tempered disposition. Do you have any pet peeves, things that you could tell us about that make you angry or upset, or that you're indignant about, whether it be on the news or in your personal life, or something just that... just makes you want to get angry about?
I am pretty well, you know, even tempered. I would say in my earlier years, I'm a pretty outspoken person. I always believe in if you've got something to say, say it. If you've got something to say to somebody, say it. Don't say it behind their back. In my younger days, Rick, I would say I was probably a little more outspoken than I am now. I think maturity kind of brings that in line. But I can't really think of anything that sticks out of things that make me angry. I mean, I've got little pet peeves, like I like the toilet paper roll going over. I don't want it going under. I like the toilet seat down. I don't want it left up. But nothing that, I mean, that doesn't make me angry. I mean, those are just, you know, little pet peeves that I have. So I can't really think of anything that just really makes me angry.
Good answer, Teresa Rose. I enjoyed that. I got a kick out of the toilet paper roll.
Hi, Teresa, and hi, everybody. What a great interview. Mari, you did an awesome job, and Teresa, you've had a really interesting life, and it further solidifies the respect I've always had for you. But my question is, I've heard all these rumors that you like to vacuum and that you keep your house really clean. You're always vacuuming and cleaning, so I guess it led me to a question of once you lost your sight, how did you go for training, or did someone teach you, or was it just natural that you continued your cooking and your cleaning and your, some blind people, once they lose their sight, they just can't do that stuff anymore. So how did you go for a training?
Okay, I did. I went through the Rehab Center for the Blind in Raleigh, North Carolina. I went the end of 97, and I was supposed to be there for 6 months, and I finished in 4.5 months. I did take a class there. I can't remember now what it was called, but they taught you how to, you know, if you spilled an egg on the floor, how to, you know, put stuff on it and clean it up and how to mop your floor and stuff like that. And I was just like, why am I in this class? But I did take Braille there. I learned grade one Braille. I did learn, I took computers. I was thinking about going to college at the time. So I did take a college prep class. I was thinking about going into social work. But to answer your question, I didn't really learn anything in voc rehab that really helped me continue to do what I needed to do, because I was sighted for so long. And actually, I would say probably my house is a lot cleaner now that I'm blind than it was when I was sighted, because everything I do is based on feel. And it's amazing. I can go behind a sighted person and they will say, I've wiped the counters, and I can go behind them and I'm thinking, you did? So it's amazing what you can see that's left behind when you can't see and you depend on all your other senses. I did get a lot out of the time that I was at the rehab center, mobility and the Braille and so forth. But I would say not in the regards to keeping my home clean.
I have more of just a comment, Teresa. I just wanted to thank you dearly for the person who you are, and thank you for being my friend, and God bless.
And I have something that I wanted to ask you. You mentioned that you got interested in boys around, I think, the 10th grade. You sure it wasn't when that you and that girl got in a fight in the 6th grade? And sure it wasn't Oprah a boy? And another one, just curious where you got your first kiss and who and where. See, I had to ask some of those questions that you ask everybody.
Okay, now let me see if I can answer this. No, in the 6th grade, the fight was not over a boy. I can tell you the girls, her name was Patricia, the same as my sister. She was from up north somewhere, so she was not a southern girl. I was in the 6th grade, and I believe she was one of these. Like I said, I was the poor kid, so I got made fun of a lot. And she was one of these kids that really, really caused everybody else to laugh and make fun of my clothes not being new. And, you know, kids egg each other on. And so the next thing I know, they're saying, there's going to be a fight after school. There's going to be a fight after school. And so there was a fight after school. She and I got in a fight, and we got called into the office the next day. And my teacher's name was Mrs. Windham, and my principal's name was Mr. Ratliff. And we got called into the class, and they wanted to know why we were fighting. And basically, she had to say it was because she was making fun of me, and I was tired of taking it. And really how, you know, it would have never, the fight would have never taken place if other kids had not really been egging it on. And let's see, what's the other question you ask? Oh, my first kiss. My first kiss was when I was about 5 years old. And I'm going to use Mars' term here that she likes. And trust me, I got my tail tore up. It was kissed by my first cousin, kissing cousin now. We're from the mountains. Kissing cousins. He was 3 years older than me. And we were at my grandparents' house, and we were all playing out in the apple and cornfield. And he kissed me. And my sister, that's 14 months younger than me, ran and told my mom and dad that cousin Bobby kissed Teresa Rose. And needless to say, I got my tail tore up. So there you go. I was five.
Well, I must tell you, Teresa Rose, you were far more precocious than I was at that age. I wanted to ask you what posed the greatest challenge for you when you first lost your sight. And were the people around you, whether it be your relatives or your friends, were they supportive for you during that period of adjustment?
I would say the biggest challenge was having to put my life back together because the love of my life walked out of my life. I really did not have time to grieve or suffer or feel sorry for myself about going blind. As I told Mar, I felt guilty because I felt that me going blind destroyed my family. And it was my fault that he left. I had to come to terms with that and get some help in order to come to terms with that. So that was probably my biggest challenge of going blind and raising, my son. He was getting ready to come into his teenage years. Which was a difficult time because even though his father told him, I'm not leaving you, I'm just leaving your mom, my son Josh, basically said, Dad, you just left me too. So, that was kind of difficult. And then there was my son that was having to deal with a mother that was having a difficult time, not only because she was going blind, but because her marriage was ending as well. And so that's probably one of the most challenging things.
I'd like to thank you, Mar, for doing a super job interviewing Teresa, my sweetie. And sweetie, it was a great, great interview. And I know a lot of this stuff that we've talked about, so I know a lot of this. But it was still nice to hear it. And I know that every time I hear you talk to your son and the love you have for him and his wife and the grandkids and Bella, just puts a smile in my heart, and you greet everyone. You never meet a stranger. It is so, that's your signature, that you never meet a stranger. Give everybody hugs, and that's what I like to tell. And the question, Over the Rainbow is your favorite song. If you had a choice, if you had a chance to travel anywhere in the world, where would you like to go again and spend some time?
I don't really have a specific question. I just wanted to say that this has been a most interesting interview, Teresa Rose. One of the reasons I look forward to coming into Pandora is because I know you're going to do such a good job of keeping us all straight. For those that don't know, Pandora is a game that some of us play every other Sunday night, and we have a big time in there, and Teresa Rose is a big part of that. She keeps us all straight. So I just want to say thank you for keeping me company during my supper. This has been fun. It's been most interesting.
One more question, Teresa Rose. I know you're a spiritual person, and I was wondering, you alluded to it, I think, a moment ago, when you first lost your sight, and you seemed to have a feeling of guilt or something of the sort. Did you question God that this happened to you, or did it cast any doubt or weaken your faith going through that at the time? What adjustments or what mental attitudes or did you go through during that period of time of adjustment?
I'll answer Rick's and then I'll answer yours, Els. Rick, no, I never really asked God, why me? Why not me? I'm no better than anybody else for anything like that to happen to. And to tell you the truth, I even mentioned this to Mar when we talked before the interview. I think if I was given the opportunity to see again or stay blind. I would rather stay blind and be the person I am and have the relationship that I have with God, because it taught me not to take things for granted and to depend on Him to always be there. If I had the choice, I'd stay blind. I would say that it helped make my faith stronger, my trust in God stronger, and maybe that's the reason it did happen. I think that things happen to us in life for a reason, and God always has a purpose. So, you know, going blind later in life, who knows who I would be or what I would be or even where I would be, not only in my life, but in my spiritual walk with God, if I had stayed sighted. So no, I've never questioned God as to why me. If anything, I would say, why not me? And Els, as far as your question, you and I are going to take that trip to Alaska. So get you warm clothes on.
I thank you for the answer to that question, Teresa Rose, and I'm glad I asked it because it shows the depth of your faith and what faith is all about. Thank you for that.
Well, thanks to everybody for coming. And again, thanks so much, Teresa Rose, for giving me this opportunity to let us know what an incredible woman you really are. And we're so honored to have you as a part of VIP Conduit. And just keep on keeping on and doing what you're doing and being who you are.
Yeah, just for the record, as soon as you said that it was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, you said to call our friends, and if we had anybody that, you know, I said, oh, I think I know who it is. I had a little bit of an idea to start with. I was kind of guessing, and when you said that, I'm like, I think it's Teresa Rose. And I was right. It was good to be right. Good interview, Mar. Good, you did a good job, and like I said, it was really enjoyable listening while I was feeding my face.
Quickly, anyone else have a question for me before I close this out?
I'd just like to say, very interesting interview, and I sure am glad I came in to listen to it.
Thank you very much, Teresa, and thank you very much, Mar. Very nice job. Great interview.
Well, without further ado, I know everyone is wondering who the VIP for the month of February is going to be. So mark on your calendars now, February the 25th, 7 p.m. Eastern Time here in the Village Square. You are going to get to learn all about our own Rodney Hersey. So Rodney will be VIP of the month for February. So make him feel welcome, February. Tell him congratulations and make sure you come in and hear all about him. Thanks, everybody, for coming out. And we're going to end the interview here with something special that's dear to my heart.
Tonight by Joss Miles.
Tonight, Lord, I believe, but I'm so broke inside. I lift my hands tonight, asking, would you open up the skies tonight? Lord, you are my light and my salvation, the stronghold of my life. But fear, it grips me tight. So would you open up the skies tonight? Lord, I need for your love to cover me. And I see no end in sight. So would of the skies tonight. To you, O Lord, I call. My feet have slipped and I've begun to fall, but instead of faith I've tried. So would you open up the skies tonight? Lord, I need for your love to cover me. And I see no end inside. So would you open up the skies tonight? Shine your light on me, for I'm alone, afflicted and
Thank you, everybody, and good night.
This has been a presentation of VIP Conduit.